Let's do this.
The Cult of Hockey Podcast by the Fateful and for the Fateful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal. And I'm here tonight with Kurt Levens. Welcome, Kurt.
Hey, Dave. Pinch hitting for our friend Bruce tonight. Great to see you.
Great to see you, Kurt. Yeah, Bruce is, I think he has some kind of astronomical powwow. I'm not exactly sure what it was.
I liked his Twitter explanation. He's a healthy scratch tonight.
Yeah. He's getting some, he's getting ready for the playoffs. Yeah. Load management. That's what he said. Yeah. Load management. Hey, there is a lot of games. This is, it's a busy time and frankly, a lot of somewhat meaningless games, but here we go. Game 80 of the season. The Oilers win 9-2 over the San Jose Sharks. Kurt, a little payback for all those years that the San Jose Sharks stomped, absolutely stomped the Edmonton Oilers. So
yeah, I felt a bit bad for the Sharks. That's a bad team.
It's not much better. Like, I know sometimes we say almost in jest it's like an AHL team, but that really is like an, that about, 80% of those players arguably could be playing in the AHL without anyone batting an eye. There's hardly any real NHL players on that team, is the truth.
Well, you know, if all those San Jose Sharks were trying to make this Edmonton Oilers roster, I think only one would be a lock to make it, and that would be Eklund.
I don't even know if he would make it, because would he 3C, you know, I guess he could be on the wing, right? They could be on the wing. And yeah, he would make it. I think that Zetterlund actually is not a bad player. Fabian Zetterlund, a kind of a stocky winger. Like, he could be a third line winger on the Oilers. I don't see any of the defensemen, maybe not even Vlasic at this point in his career.
I agree.
He's stuck there because of his big contract and there's no moving him. So
Klim Kostin was the only Sharks player who wasn't a minus tonight. How did he do that? Some strategic line changes, I think.
I didn't even know he wasn't San Jose until tonight. I missed that trade. So
yeah, Detroit.
They're not missing him. He made a mistake leaving Edmonton, but anyway, he went for the money. You can't blame. That's a lot of money that he got an extra $1 million, or that's a lot of money for a guy who hasn't made a lot of money yet. So
yeah.
Kurt, this is our Two Good Things, Two Bad Things, and Two Numbers podcast with one conundrum. What is your good thing?
Well, my good thing is Dylan Holloway. Ever since let's back up a little bit. His last AHL game before he was recalled was the hat trick game. So up comes the hat trick kid, which I think you might have coined in one of your columns.
In a headline, yeah.
Yeah, at the recall. And the kid has been nothing but fabulous since. Three-point night tonight, a goal and two assists. And that line between him, Ryan McLeod, and Corey Perry is a handful and a half. No opposition seems to be able to catch McLeod and Holloway. And Corey Perry, who probably skates at half their speed when he's going full out, but he's so smart. I mean, I lost count of how many good plays he made down deep and along the wall tonight. He's just so great at protecting the puck, and he's so smart, and he just understands where everybody is in the zone. That trio is dangerous. I think everybody saw Dylan Holloway coming up and thought, well, this is a good way to give a few people some rest and, you know, insert Holloway into the top nine and, you know, and then he can be in the taxi squad for the playoffs. But as you watch him pile up points and you watch that performance on the third line, Dave, it's going to be hard to pull him out of the lineup when it comes to game one of the playoffs. In fact, if you base it on his body of work to date, since the recall, I think you'd have to play him in game one. It's going to be a tough decision. Those tough decisions are good to have if you're Chris Knobloch. But it's going to be fascinating to watch, because I think the kid isn't just happy to be here. I think he came here intent on pushing his way into a lineup spot.
Kurt, I'm going to agree and disagree with you. I think he has played well, very well, since the call-up. You know, tonight's game was a game against essentially a semi-AHL team. And that line was fantastic. The the rush goals that the Oilers scored tonight, one after another in the second period, it was just fantastic. And Holloway made some excellent passes and some smart decisions. He has been a culprit on a few goals against, and I don't know who he takes out on the fourth line because they all kill penalties. And I don't know. So Evander Kane was sitting out. Evander Kane will be in the lineup in the playoffs in the first game. 100%. So I don't know who Holloway takes out in the top nine. So I'm not going to agree with you. I don't think he will be in the lineup. I don't, unless they want him on the fourth line, somehow get him on the fourth line. I don't see it. I just don't, you know, yeah. And he has been good, but he isn't nearly as sound defensively as Janmark or Connor Brown or Derek Ryan or Carrick. So
yeah, just to be clear, I'm not saying he absolutely should be. I'm saying is he's making a case. He's making it tough. Like Knobloch is going to have to look him in the eye and say, you're not playing. And the player's going to go, really? And I think that's a good thing for the team, right?
Here's what he's doing, Kurt. He's making it easy if the Oilers lose a game in the playoffs to make a hard decision then. Because you might have to sit a veteran player. Let's say there's someone in the top nine. Let's say it's Evander Kane or Adam Henrique or Warren Fogle or Ryan McLeod, who's just had a bad game and isn't playing well.
For someone who gets hurt?
If someone gets hurt, then it's super easy. But even then, like if it's a hard decision, like sitting a veteran player, one of those top nine players, there's not obvious picks to sit. And Corey Perry is not an obvious pick to sit. He would actually be my most likely player to sit, Corey Perry, because I don't think he's actually in the last little while has been playing that well. This is his first really good game in a while. And he was really good tonight. But Corey Perry, to me, he's been looking slow and hasn't been making great plays and hasn't been super. So
I just don't think you'll ever take Corey Perry out of the lineup in the playoffs.
Well, maybe not. But you might bump him down to the fourth line. But then again, you know, if you can cover yourself on the penalty kill, if you sit Brown or Janmark, maybe Holloway gets in. But anyway, I think... He's made it much easier for Knobloch to eventually put him in, and I think we will see him in the playoffs. He's going to get a chance. There will be injuries. He is going to get a chance, and maybe he's going to make a big mark in the playoffs. I mean, everyone has seen this guy's talent, his skill, size, his hitting, and it's great to see him putting it together in a stretch of games. This is really the first stretch of games where he's put it together, and it's a short stretch. But you know he's going to play the rest of the end of the season. Let's just jump ahead. Let's just deal with this now, Kurt. Who do you think is going to get called up, and what do you think will be the policy for playing and sitting players in the next couple games?
Well, I am 100% positive that Philip Broberg will get called up.
Yeah,
and I think he and Troy Stetcher probably played both of the last remaining two games.
Yeah.
And if I'm Chris Knobloch, I would sit two entire pairs. I wouldn't mix and match anybody. You've got your pairs set. So
yeah.
If you decide that you're going to sit Bouchard and Ekholm, put Broberg and Stetcher in their place. Or if you decide you're going to sit, you know, Kulak and Deharnay, fine. I'd put Stetcher and Broberg in there. That's how I'd approach it. Up front, I think there's a good chance, not 100%, that Raphael Lavoie will get a game or two.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely convinced Sam Gagner will be on the Black Aces. Whether he'll play or one or two of the final games of the season, I don't know. I think it's more likely one of the young kids will get one of those games because they already know what Gagner can do. They don't need to see anything. But I think he'll be around on the Black Aces come playoff time.
If it's me, I'd be happy to see McDavid and Draisaitl sit out the last two games. You know, they're interesting games because you're going into Arizona and it's the last game there. It's an emotional game and you might get a fairly aggressive performance out of Arizona. Mm-hmm. Why be in that game? It's an absolutely nothing game. Why would you risk McDavid or Draisaitl in a game like that? Or Hyman? I'd sit all three of those players. And you're going into Colorado. And you may recall the last time the Oilers played Colorado, Mikko Rantanen took a massive hit. And from Ekholm, I'd said Ekholm that game. And for instance, Bouchard and Ekholm. And I'm not sure I'd play McDavid or Draisaitl against that team either, because if Manson's playing, like, they might be a little bit of headhunting and looking for some revenge. You just never know. So I don't see any reason to play your best players for the rest of the season. And although I do expect that they will play, I'd be happy if they didn't. And, you know, bring up, as you say, Lavoie, bring up Sam Gagné, definitely Philip Broberg. I mean, he is overripe for sure. Yep. He's just killing it down there. And yeah, sit Ekholm and Bouchard one game, sit Nurse and CeCe the next. Or if there's some injury we don't know about, then, you know, you cover off those players as well. But I'm hoping that they actually really take advantage of the Bakersfield airlift and aggressively manage the load of their best players.
So here's a twist on that, because I think all of what you just said makes perfect sense. But if Vancouver loses its next game, as you know, there is still a real chance that Edmonton could catch Vancouver and win the division.
Well, the tiebreaker is, just wait a second here. Let me just check the standings, Kurt. I hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah, if we run the table and the Canucks don't get a single point, we can still finish first.
Okay. So they just have one game left if they lose it? Do they just have one left? Or do they have two?
I think both teams are at the 80-game mark now.
Oh, so they'd have to lose two.
They'd have to lose two, and the Oilers would have to win two. They're three back right now.
All right. So it's possible, but I just think it's a long shot anyway. So I don't know who the Canucks play, but
I certainly agree with you that McDavid and Draisaitl at the absolute maximum should only play one of the two remaining games. So here's the other twist. The first twist was, well, what if Vancouver loses? Here's the other twist. I think a lot of those players, it's pretty tough for you to look them in the eye and say you're not playing. Like, tell Leon Draisaitl he's not going to play all 82 regular season games.
Or Nurse or Bouchard. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think the thing about, you know this, David, about hockey players, particularly at that level, they're incredibly competitive. They don't want a night off. You know, I think McDavid was able to, square it in his head, because he did have a minor injury that he wanted to deal with. And I think that's how he was able to get his head around it. But you saw him come back against a last place team tonight and play. Don't tell me it was any other reason than he said, OK, I'm good. Now I'm playing again.
So, well, he wants 100 assists, Kurt.
What's that?
He wanted 100 assists. Like,
well, sure. And who wouldn't, right?
Which is my good thing, by the way. Let's move on to my good thing here.
Yeah, you bet.
Or just wait, finish your point, because I'm not sure you were finished your point.
It's hard to tell what the mix is going to be. I think your words make sense, but I can think of lots of real firm arguments against not doing what you say. It'll be interesting to see what Chris Knobloch chooses.
It will be, and I agree, the players will have a say. Like, if there are all those players who have played every game, and that's significant for a player. Like, I played every game that year. On the other hand, they have been through this before. They have got, this is the year to win the Stanley Cup. You know, it's the clock is ticking on this team. They're all in their prime still. How would you feel if you forced your way into a game 81 against Phoenix and you got injured? Like, yeah. It's just, you had a chance to sit and rest to do the same thing. I just think the same thing makes so much sense that it overrides other considerations, and will for the players as well. And I think we've already seen it with McDavid, and I'm hoping we'll see it again with McDavid. What I expect to happen is them to play one out of two games, not both, and probably sit. Makes most sense to sit against the Avs the last game because it's closest to the playoffs. But why would you play on Thursday? Like, I'm not even sure they could play Saturday in theory. That's not even set yet, is it? Like, it's either Saturday or Sunday.
It's sounding like Sunday, but I agree, it's not set yet. And the other thing is the goaltending. Do you play Pickard in the last two games?
Maybe. Well, that's, yeah. My good thing, Kurt. Connor McDavid joins the truest of hockey royalty. It's hard to think of a truer hockey royalty, except for one additional name, Gordie Howe, than Mario Lemieux, Bobby Orr, and Wayne Gretzky. in the 100 assist club. That is an exclusive club. Now, of course, it with anything, with any record where it's like cumulative goals or cumulative assists in a season, it eliminates all the players almost from pre-expansion NHL, pre-initial expansion of 1967. They just played 60 games in a season then. And when you're playing 60 games, it's that much. McDavid didn't get 100 assists in 60 games, for instance. I don't know if anybody has. Probably Gretzky did it, but he's probably the only one. So all of these players, like Howie Morenz, the voted the greatest player of the first half of the 20th century, and he's in the Cult of Hockey logo with Wayne Gretzky and Paul Henderson. Gretzky, they didn't have that opportunity. Gordie Howe didn't have an opportunity to get 100 assists. So that needs to be said in terms of this record. Like, it's missing a couple players who might have made it in their era if they played 82 games in that era. But nonetheless, what a tremendous accomplishment, and what a great moment for Connor McDavid and the whole building. You and at home, you and I at home, everybody said, how could he not get an assist in a game where they're going to score, you know, 9 or 10 or 11 goals? How could that happen? And then it happened. And it was a very nice play, too. He gets a fantastic stretch pass from Darnell Nurse, who had held the puck, waited for the seam to open up, and made the great pass up ice. And he charges in. He dekes a player who's sprawling to the ice and feeds Hyman for the goal. It was a kind of a classic goal for this season and a great moment. And to see him smile on the bench, his great smile, it meant a lot to him. It was nice to see that it did. And he acknowledged that in between periods in the interview with Gene Principe, talking about being in that select group. I mean, just imagine if your name was in that group of players with Orr and Lemieux and Gretzky. What a thing to do. What an accomplishment.
Well, my favorite hockey player of all time is Bobby Orr. And here's where I'm going to shake the picture up just a little bit. And
I can see it now, Kurt. Oh, it's out of focus again. It's anyway, it was in focus for a second. That's our high-tech Cult of Hockey graphics.
Yes, there you go. Autographed in person by Bobby Orr.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, so.
Kurt, I have a Bobby Orr story that I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
So I was a student at Carleton University, and we were partnered with the Reader's Digest on a project where they were teaching us to do investigative reporting. And we were looking at major junior players and whether at that time major junior was a good deal for players. This was before the university scholarship program was brought in. So we were calling people up and asking them. And I had the task of interviewing Bobby Orr on this. So I'm here in Edmonton, Alberta, and I call him one night. And I forgot about the time zone difference. So I called him. I think it was about midnight his time. And I woke him up. I woke up Bobby Orr. I'm like this 20-year-old kid who's hardly interviewed anybody. And I'm interviewing Bobby Orr. And he was the most polite person and gentleman. And he gave me a full interview. That's Bobby Orr.
Yeah, that is my experience. I've interacted with Mr. Orr a few times, and he has been the same with me every time as well. The first time I ever met him was the very first Orr Cherry game.
Yeah.
Everyone they used to play the prospect games and Orr and Cherry coaches. I covered the very first one. And I remember, and I'm not a nervous person, but I was nervous before I went down to the dressing room after the game because Bobby Orr was my idol. And you know what they say, don't meet your idols, right? And I was scared stiff that Bobby Orr might not be everything that I thought he was. And I was so relieved after the fact to realize that he was everything that I thought he was and more. So I had very similar experience with Mr. Orr that you did. Your story's pretty cool. That's great.
Well, kind of embarrassing, but I think he said, do you know what time it is?
No. Well, you know, no, I don't. He had to put up with Derek Sanderson all those years, David. This was probably minor compared to that.
And he was very thoughtful in the interview. I gave an interesting critique of Major Junior. All right, Kurt. Let's move on to our bad things. They're fairly small. What is your bad thing tonight?
Yeah, it's tough in a 9-2 game to pick a bad thing, but I'll pick the Vincent Desharnais play on the 9-2 goal. It's a 9-1 game. And you, as the most defensive of defensemen on this team, decide this is a good time to press up in the play and get caught up in what turned into a 2-on-1. And despite the very best efforts of Ryan Nugent Hopkins, who busted his hump to get back and actually got his man. But ultimately, San Jose scored the 9-2 goal on the play. There's a case where, look, Vincent Desharnais is a valuable member of this team, and I don't mean to hack on him, but once you've been in this league for a little while, you have to understand the situation in the game, what's going on, and decide that puck just needs to be lifted into the corner, and you need to get off the ice and kick it. Right, you know, so I'm not going to yard on the guy. It was a minor mistake at a nothing point and a runaway laugher. But come playoff time, I sure hope he makes a better decision than that.
Oh, I think he will. I think it was for him. It's more like the exception to the rule. It's like the only time I'm ever going to rush the puck is in a 9-1 game with 4 minutes left, and then I will rush it. That's the exception to his rule. He hasn't been caught up ice very much all year long. So, but he definitely was in that moment. And then he made another rush shortly after that where he went in fairly deep. And I think he went on the forecheck too. So I don't know. Anyway.
Maybe he wanted to be even like Clem Costin and not plus.
Yeah, Costin, the only even player that game. Amazing. Bruce, my bad thing is, well, I'm not going to say this is troubling, but just a wee bit. Stuart Skinner has, I think, not been super sharp for a while now. And the first goal that he let in, although it was already, I think, 4-0 at that point, it was a weird goal to let in. It wasn't any kind of hard shot. I mean, it's like if it was in a key moment in a key game, it would have been a horrendous goal against, obvious. Anyway, because it was just a bad angle shot that right near the, you know, there was nowhere to shoot, nowhere to score. And the only way it got in because his stick was too high and his foot wasn't against the post. It was two mistakes in a row. And again, not to make too much of it, but he hasn't been super sharp. I thought he let in a weak goal against last game, the one on the rush that was generally blamed on Nurse and Holloway. I thought actually Stu should have had that as well. Shot from the dot like that NHL goalies have 90% of the time, 90% of the time. So that is, you know, not great. And it will unsettle him a little bit and just maybe the team just a little bit. It's one of those weird little things. It's like in the back of your mind now, okay, well, Stu's not really, he's not kicking butt right now. It would be nice if he was. So I think he will get another game probably just to see if he can get through a game without any bad goals at all.
I agree. It was a bit of a Mikko Koskinen goal. I kind of was having flashbacks and cold sweats when I saw that. I did feel good about the breakaway save that he made a while later.
Yes.
And I thought he snapped that puck rather emphatically as if to say, all right, now I'm locked in.
Fair enough.
I guess you can do the old Grant Fear thing. It's not how many you let in. It's what you stop and when. But I'm with you. When I saw that goal, I went, oof.
Yeah.
The eyes stung a little bit on that one.
There was a great thing online the other day on Twitter. Paul Campbell, who's just a fan in Toronto I'm not sure what level of goalie, plays beer league goalie, whatever, but he's a goalie from way back. And he found some other goalie talking about his mindset and about how his whole mindset is like, there's no score. There's nothing. There's no future. There's no past. There's just this moment. And I'm just here. That's it. And I don't care about anything else. And nothing matters. There's just this moment. Whatever happens, happens. Just this kind of being totally present in the moment and not worried about anything. just kind of being there and doing your thing, having a blank slate, so to speak, and letting your training take over. So the performance anxiety doesn't destroy you in the moment. And it was just, you can look it up on Twitter if you Google Paul Campbell. And it was a great quote. And I think that all these goalies are incredibly mentally strong in that way. So Stu Skinner's probably, this probably isn't phasing him at all. But I just remember from reading the game, Ken Dryden's great book, about how he took it, everything he did on the ice, he wanted it to be in sync. Early in the game, if he was handling the puck, he wanted to make a good pass with the puck. So the whole team's rhythm and confidence would build. So there'd be nothing to throw it off. And he saw on that great team, that's how he saw his role, was just not to be a cog in the machine and not be out of place. Because if he was that team would usually win. And on a certain level, I mean, these orders aren't as dominant as that Canadiens team, although they're not that far off, in my opinion. Skinner has to be the same thing. Just don't let anything unsettle anybody else. And he might have that in mind, I'm not sure. But that's what I was thinking of, that, you know, the Ken Dryden example. Kurt, your number?
80, which is the point total that Evan Bouchard achieved during tonight's game. Miles and miles and paragraphs and paragraphs and pages have been written about Evan Bouchard's game. But at the end of the day, the hardest thing to do in hockey is score. And Evan Bouchard is now only the second defenseman in Edmonton Oilers history to reach the 80-point mark in a season. And of course, the other guy stands behind him on the bench. That's Paul Coffey. Is Evan Bouchard the perfect defender? Absolutely not. But I think we don't do this enough. And the next breath, was Paul Coffey the perfect defender? Absolutely not. Right?
And, yeah.
You know, am I saying Evan Bouchard is Paul Coffey? Well, not yet. But when you score 80 points from the rear, you're doing something right. And many people have been critical of Evan Bouchard's uneven defensive game, me included. I don't mean to, you know, throw rocks at glass houses. But it's a real accomplishment for the young man. He's come a long way. And you get the feeling that he's not tapped out. I think this kid is getting better and better. But the funny thing about the 80th point tonight, it comes after three or four games where I've watched Evan Bouchard and I've thought to myself, he's defending way better than he has all year long. And you might remember that defensively, Bouchard was actually pretty decent in the playoffs last year, too. No one expects him to be Matthias Ekholm. But if he can, he's a big, tall guy. You know, when he can use his reach and use his height and take his man, that simple defensive game behind his own blue line will lead to more and more chances with the puck headed in the other direction. So I think 80 points is a nice benchmark for him to hit. But I think behind the scenes, it's his gradually improving defensive play that's allowing him to achieve these things.
Yeah, there's been comparisons for a long time of Bouchard to Larry Murphy, who was a highly skilled defenseman who had his defensive mistakes. But the player that I think is, and I think that's not a bad comparison. I mean, Larry Murphy's in the Hall of Fame, if I'm not mistaken.
As a Stanley Cup ring, yeah.
Yeah. So the defenseman I think he reminds me of is Al MacInnis. And if he can start to reach that level of play all around, I think MacInnis was a better defensive defenseman, but his offensive game, Bouchard's offensive game, is very similar to MacInnis. And MacInnis had that great shot. Bouchard has the great shot. MacInnis was a fantastic passer of the puck. So is Evan Bouchard. Murphy didn't have the shot that those two players. He had a decent shot, but not like McInnes or Bouchard. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out. I agree. There's still miles to go for Evan Bouchard, especially in the playoffs, right? Like, let's see how all these guys do in the playoffs. That's what I'm really curious to see. And see where he ends up.
The McInnes comparison is interesting. I was on the host broadcast when McInnes played in Calgary.
Oh, yeah.
And he's a very nice guy, by the way. Very generous, very down-to-earth fella. I'd say there are two unique points on the players. One thing, McInnes was downright mean on the ice. Like, he had a chippiness to him that Evan does not have.
Fair enough.
And on the other hand, Evan is a way more fluid player than McInnes was. Al was everything that you said he was. Great shot, good passer, you know, winner, etc. But he had a bit of a herky-jerky style to him, whereas Evan is a very fluid player. And so they appear to me different on the ice. But I agree, they do have some interesting similarities as well. If Evan Bouchard ends up having even close to the career Al McInnes have, I think all Oilers fans would be pretty happy.
So, Kurt, since the turn of the century, in this century, only 11 defensemen have had 80-point seasons in the NHL. Eric Karlsson leads the way at 101-point season last year. Roman Josi, 21-22, had 96 points. Then we go down Hughes, 91, Makar, 89, Makar, 86, Josi, 85, Hedman, 85, Burns, 83, Karlsson, 82, and then there's Evan Bouchard, 81.
So
that's remarkable company that Evan Bouchard's in.
Are all but two of those guys Norris Trophy winners?
Hughes is yet to win the Norris.
And Bouchard is yet to win the Norris. I think Bouchard's list has, right?
Hughes will win the Norris, it looks like, this year. Since seems like a pretty solid bet. So he's going to win the North. So yeah, there'll only be one guy who hasn't on that entire list. So
that's something.
And the just behind him is Lidstrom, who won the Norris a few times.
Wow.
Who had 80 points.
Making my point for me, David. Thanks.
Well, I just was curious. Kurt, my number is, there were so many goals on the rush tonight that I just got. I was thinking, man, we can remember a time when this was a huge problem this year. So in the first 13 games of the year under Jay Woodcroft, the Oilers had 9 goals, 4 on the rush at even strength, and 23 against. So that's 28% goals, 4 percentage on the rush at that point. Under Knobloch, 83-4, 63 against, and a 57% goals, 4 percentage. That's a huge difference under those two coaches. And I don't think there's much difference on the attack other than they're getting bit better puck luck on the attack. They were still getting pretty good chances. Defensively, though, the Oilers were a mess at the start of the year, and in net, they were a mess. So those two things led to all those rush chances against, and obviously they're a much better defensive team against Knobloch. And it's actually their defensive play, which I think is a reasonable, gives a reasonable hope for Oilers fans that they'll win the cup this year. Their defensive play has not been this consistently good since
Mac T was coach.
Since Pronger was on defense, right? Like, that was a pretty good defensive team when they wanted to be. This is a pretty good defensive team when they want to be. And they've shut it down on the rush. They've shut it down in all situations under Knobloch. So I'm pretty, I'm really happy about that, Kurt. I just love the winning streak, not just because it was such a great winning streak, but because they played such solid defensive hockey, and we haven't seen that from the Oilers. So,
so many games of allowing 2 goals or less, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the interesting asterisk on tonight's game, of course, is that all 9 goals were 5-on-5.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't. Was there a power play? I can't even remember.
They had one.
They had one. All right. All right. Our conundrum, Kurt. And it is a conundrum indeed. Who would you most like to see the Oilers play in the first round and least like to see the Oilers play? Because it could be any of them, Nashville, LA, or Vegas, as I understand it.
Yeah. You want me to go first?
Go ahead.
If I'm picking, I'll pick Nashville. Because even though they've had a very hot second half, they've really come on. They've certainly earned their way into the postseason. The Oilers have owned Nashville. Leon Draisaitl in particular has owned the Predators. I think that's actually a quite a poor match for Nashville. And so if I had to choose, I'd pick that. I think that's highly unlikely that's going to happen. But that would have been my best case scenario. I guess the toughest one is Vegas, because they didn't beat them last year. And that question as a result is still to be answered. But what I'll say in my next breath about this question in general is good teams don't care who they play. And I think the Oilers are a really good team that shouldn't care who they play. I think they're good enough to beat anybody. I think the toughest out in the Western Conference is Dallas. I think the second toughest out is Edmonton. And as a result, I don't think they should care who they play. If I had to pick, I'd sooner not see Vegas. I'd sooner see Nashville, but I guess we'll see.
I think the Oilers are the toughest out. They now have a better goal differential than Dallas by one, 64 to 63. The Oilers have the best goal differential. And even though Dallas is a fantastic team, I think the Oilers are a better team. They've just got the two superstars. Does Dallas have the two superstars? They've got a ton of really good players.
Yeah, they're a very good
and team. And the level of determination from McDavid and Draisaitl this year, I think it's going to be off the charts good. Anyway, I said this before, and I think the only team that can beat the Oilers in these playoffs are the Oilers. If they play their game, they should win. They should win the Stanley Cup. I really believe that, and I believe they're the best team. So, and I really like your point that they shouldn't care and they don't care. As a fan, I would love to see Vegas go and have to play Dallas. I just think that would be justice for that.
I'm with you.
So I'm just hoping for that. And even though if the Oilers play Vegas, I think that's fine. Play Vegas. You know, that was a good game against Vegas. They really handled them last game. That's got to be in Vegas's head a little bit. But I think your point about Nashville is really good. Like, just when you look at the way these teams match up, the Oilers have just dominated the Predators. They're not a veteran team, the Predators. They've been hot, but we'll see. You know, that would be the best ideal matchup. So they have 99 points. They're done. The Kings have 97 points. Now, I don't know who wins if they tie the Kings or the Predators. Like, who, if they're tied in the standings. But no, that, it doesn't matter. So if the Kings win their next game, they'll have 99. But Vegas could finish with 100. So, yeah, Nashville and the Kings could be tied. I don't know who wins the tiebreaker.
I did hear someone say tonight there is a, albeit slim, possibility the Oilers could play Nashville.
Let me see this, what the tiebreaker is. The team, okay, the team with the greater number of games won, excluding games won in overtime or the shootout. So it looks like LA has 43 wins. And 11 overtime Bettman points. And Nashville has 47 wins and just 5. So it looks like if they're tied, Nashville will win that tiebreaker. So the way that you play Nashville is if LA stays ahead of Vegas, but Vegas moves ahead of LA. Oh, I could see Vegas could get 3 points and then tie Nashville, but they also have fewer wins. I don't think there's a possibility the Oilers can play Nashville.
I heard someone say that.
I could be wrong. We'll be corrected by, Ira Cooper usually listens and he'll know. He'll have thought through this. And Bruce, Ira will know. Ira will know. He's original Pozar on Twitter. And a contributor to the Cult of Hockey, and he will know the answer to this question. My reading of it, and I'm probably wrong, is I'm not seeing. Anyway, I would prefer. I'm not worried about LA though either. Like personally,
nope.
LA, they're a good team. But I just think the Oilers, so my order of preference, if they can play Nashville, that's number one, then LA and then Vegas.
Yeah. LA's two best players are a year older than when we beat them last time.
It's the clock is really ticking on the LA Kings.
I respect those players, but yeah.
Well, Drew Doughty is such a fantastic hockey player. Always has been.
He and Kopitar are great players. They're just not as young and quick and spry as they used to be.
Yeah. And the Oilers aren't the Oilers that lost, let's say, to Chicago a few years ago when there was lots of veteran players on Chicago. Kind of, this is not that Oilers team, but.
Oilers are the oldest team in the league now.
Ah, yeah, indeed. Indeed. All right, Kurt. Well, you're going to finish your posting of the game grades tonight, and I will add in the code for the this podcast. So I want to thank you for filling in for Bruce tonight. Thanks a lot, Kurt.
Hey, I'm happy to do my Rusty Staub best pinch hitting for my friend Bruce.
So. Le Grand Orange. All right. Thanks, Kurt.
See you, Dave. Take care. See you, everybody.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.